Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Is sponsored.
The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
I've never heard of this. So yesterday, I guess 200 people in the DOJ write a letter and saying the case against Flynn should not be dropped for whatever reason. And so this is a criminal case. And my understanding, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm just a layman, but my understanding is when there's a criminal case, it's a federal case, it's between the prosecutors of the United States and the defense team. And he said, well, before I make a final decision on withdrawing the case, I'm going to let these 100 people do an America's opinion brief. I've never heard of this.
Right.
What is going on here? And I'm going to bring in Jenna Ellis. Hey, Jenna, you're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Thanks for being with us. You're also with State Senator from Virginia, Joe Morrissey, long-term prosecutor and lawyer. I know you've been on hold. You've heard some of our conversations. Joe, I'm going to start with you and then go to Jenna. I've never heard of this. The judge says, I want other people to weigh in on this decision. What does it have to do with opinions?
All right. First of all, the judge, I don't know that he said, I want other entities to weigh in. If he did, that's wrong. It's also irresponsible for DOJ officials to write a collective letter and say, we think he's guilty, or we know he's guilty, or we have evidence that he's guilty. You know, that's not how our system works.
Mm-hmm.
I was a prosecutor, I was a defense attorney. It's what takes place in the four corners of that courtroom. What evidence do you mm-hmm. produce,
mm-hmm.
all right? Not opinion. We don't try people on opinion polls. And I think it is absolutely wrong to do that. What if, reverse it, say a defendant is on trial and you had people that are supporting the defendant prior to the trial, what's going on, writing these public letters. Okay, now, the judge would say, listen, that's not what the way we're doing things here. So,
but in this case, the judge asked, he said, go ahead, I'll give you a period of time. Let's bring Jenna Ellis in. Jenna Ellis is the attorney for Trump-Pence 2020. Jenna, what on earth is this?
Yeah, and I completely agree with the assessment that you all are talking about. And, you know, as a former prosecutor myself, I'm just appalled at how this case has been handled from start to hopefully what needs to actually be a finish and a conclusion very soon. This motion to dismiss, now that it's coming from the government, in any other case that wasn't so obviously politically motivated and politically driven, would have been dismissed immediately by the judge, just no question. When a prosecutor comes and says, you know, hey, there have been so many mistakes, including withholding Brady evidence, exculpatory materials, there's just no question under the law. But now Judge Sullivan has gone even further, and by allowing this group of former Watergate prosecutors who are clearly biased and clearly politically motivated to now weigh in, it's absolutely absurd that he is putting this off and just to continue to harass General Flynn. And the most absurd part about it, if we can even get further absurd, is the fact that even in this same case, in 24 previous instances, as Sidney Powell highlighted in her motion and her objection to these amicus filings, is that Judge Sullivan, on 24 prior occasions in this same case, specifically denied any other interveners and any other statements or amicus filings, and literally said that the federal rules of criminal procedure do not provide for intervention by third parties in criminal cases. So what's the difference here? Oh, just to delay and harass, and because this is something that he actually wants on the open record. I mean, this is appalling. This is a miscarriage of justice, and this is absolutely fundamentally against the rule of law. And I completely agree with President Trump when he says that this kind of thing should never, ever happen in America. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. This is not what constitutional due process requires.
But it is happening, Joe.
Yeah, there's a very, it continues very important to happen. Point that you have to understand here. In 35 years, actually probably 40, because I was actually, when I was at Georgetown Law, I was involved in the criminal justice program. So we tried cases in federal court. My first jury trial I did, I was 23 or 22. I can't remember. I was just in my second year of law school. I can't emphasize this point enough. In almost four decades, I have never seen a situation where a prosecutor went before the judge and said, "We move to dismiss because of prosecutorial misconduct," and that didn't stop right there. Full stop. That's how it's done. Here, the judge says, "Well, tell you what. Let's do a little poll. Send me some briefs. I want to hear from the world about this." That is disgraceful and deplorable. And that's number one. Number two, the prosecutor has an obligation. Our guest talked about Brady material or Giglio. It is incumbent on the government to turn over evidence that has the potential to help a defendant. Are you clear?
Yeah.
Not that it's clearly beyond by clear and convincing evidence that it will help the defendant. If it has merely the potential to help, and it became apparent that the government withheld evidence that had the potential, a lot more than potential, to help Flynn, and the government said that, and the judge is still now pontificating on rather to dismiss it. And I want the folks out there to realize this. I'm not in the Republican corner. I'm a state senator, a Democratic state senator on the Judiciary Committee in Virginia, that is looking at this and saying it's wrong what they did to this man, and it continues to be wrong. And the judge allowed amicus, that means a friend of the court, brief. Now, but he denied it before. Really? When Flynn was being raked over the coals, you denied amicus briefs from being introduced. Fair enough. I get it. But now, while it's still an open case, you not only allow amicus briefs in support of the DOJ, you solicit them.
Unbelievable.
No, unbelievable doesn't describe it.
Jenna, what is the objective here of Judge Sullivan? What is he trying to do?
Yeah, I have no idea, frankly, because this is putting his career on the line. Because anyone who is so a judge who just completely flouts the rule of law and appears to be so politically motivated is never ever the proper decision for a judge. And I'm grateful that the congressman or the representative that we have on the line as well, who says he's a Democrat. I mean, I'm so thankful that others of not my party are joining in this to say that this should never happen, because this is about our country and our rule of law, not about politics. And justice should never, ever, ever be about politics. And the fact that Judge Sullivan is showing his bias and he is making these decisions, it gives an inference and an assumption that he is not objective here. And so it's mind-blowing, actually, that someone who is on the bench would be so non-credible to actually conduct this type of bench. I mean, it's absolutely beyond anything that should ever happen, and he should be the one person in that courtroom that does not have a side, the one person that is the referee. I mean, that's what the judicial branch is supposed to be, impartial. And, the prosecutors in that room actually have a responsibility as well. Their oath of office is to the U.S. Constitution to do what justice requires. Their client is justice in that room. And the fact that they have now finally moved to dismiss this case is the right and proper thing to do. And there is absolutely no reason in any other case. This would be a judge would sign off on it automatically, especially given the underlying facts here. So, I mean, for Judge Sullivan, it's beyond comprehension what his contemplation could possibly be, because I think his career is on the line.
Well, let me ask you this, Jenna. You said that twice now, that Judge Sullivan's career is on the line. How is it on the line? He has a lifetime appointment to the federal bench. He can only be impeached for certain violations. Do you think that allowing an amicus brief or briefs rises to the level of behavior that warrants removal, warrants impeachment?
I do. And the reason is because it's just so manifestly improper. And the fact that you have him stating on the record in his own minute orders in this particular case. I mean, it's not even like they're analogous cases that he can somehow parse and somehow, you know, try to distinguish. He has said in this case that statements and outside are improper and that the federal rules don't allow it. And so this is the type of conduct that is judicially improper. And even though federal judges do have a lifetime appointment, if we in America would hold our judges accountable and would actually use the power of impeachment for such egregious misconduct, then maybe these judges would not actually have any motivation but to do the rule of law and what justice and the Constitution requires.
Jenna, and does so an impeachment of a United States sitting federal judge, does that begin in the Senate, or does it begin in the House?
It would have to begin in the House. And, you know, we have a few other prior instances. I mean, there have been other impeachments of judges and actually removal. I mean, unlike presidents, we've never removed a president from office for impeachment, but we have removed a few judges for egregious conduct in the past. And so we do have precedent along those lines. And that's something, you know, I think that at least his impartiality in terms of how he's perceived by future litigants and what future attorneys can object to and bring in his courtroom. I mean, I, as an advocate, it would give me great concern going before a judge knowing that he is something other than faithful to the rule of law. And so absolutely there should be an inquiry. And, you know, if the House wants to have an inquiry over something so frankly outside the scope of what impeachment was designed for, when with this whole ridiculous, as President Trump calls it, the witch hunt. And, you know, and I was part of defending the president on the whole impeachment that just happened. I mean, that seems like such a long time ago now. But there was absolutely zero merit to that. It was fully political. And so if the House, as a Democrat majority, doesn't want to conduct the same sort of inquiry and at least look at impeachment in this case, then the Democrats, their only principles are that they have absolutely double standards here, because that's what the founders intended when they gave the impeachment power to the House, is that type of oversight and to look into cases exactly like this that are clearly politically motivated.
Well, first of all, Jenna, don't lump all Democrats together, because you're speaking to one Democrat during that process that said, let's follow the rule of law. Let's follow the evidence. And you're speaking to one Democrat that said that impeachment was not warranted with regard to
true.
The President of the United States.
True, quite true. Jenna, I'm going to...
Right, I want to say, you know, I gave them credit definitely for calling the Flynn situation like it is. And I think that if more people were objective, I mean, the rule of law is blind, and
right.
It should be objective, and it shouldn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. And that is why this country has gotten so far off course with constitutional issues, because both parties at times can look at things through the lens of party preferences and political preferences when we shouldn't. And that's what constitutionalism, that's what originalism actually means, and conserving the rule of law is to make sure that we aren't looking at political partisan interests. I mean, when you can and when it's valid, like, I mean, there are political branches, but law enforcement and the judiciary, constitutionally, they are not supposed to be politically motivated.
I want to get to two more issues, and we've got 8 minutes, so go ahead.
I say this. Jenna said something very important. When you conflate the due process and the rule of law and fairness with politics, you're going to have a huge problem. And that's why I object so much here. Not that I'm on the side of Michael Flynn. He was when he left, retired from the United States Army, he made all the conservative talk show shows, radio and television, and he was a real thorn in the side to Democrats, okay? I'm not agreeing with all of his policies and positions. But then, in February of 2016, he joins the Trump campaign. And in the July 2016 convention, you might remember he strenuously criticized Obama and told the assemblage there that Hillary Clinton should drop out of the race due to her flagrant security violations. And he's ramping up the crowd. It was at that point that he earned the absolute unbridled contempt of Washington insiders, and they decided he's got to go. And then when it was considered that he was going to be appointed, you know, national security director, then it became a full on to get this man. And that, folks, ladies and gentlemen, is what I object to. You might object to somebody's politics. You might object to their positions on certain issues, but you don't go after them for criminal charges because you don't agree with them. And when the government goes after you, they have an unlimited checkbook. They could do whatever 100%. They want. And that, folks, is the problem here. And that's why I think this, it puts the entire Mueller investigation, makes it suspect now, the entire investigation.
100%. And also that same argument is exactly why President Trump was acquitted and the impeachment should never have happened either, because it was completely politically motivated. And that exact same argument, you can disagree with President Trump's policies, that's what we have elections for, but you do not wield the power of House impeachment simply to target a sitting president for politically motivated reasons. And that should never happen to any United States president, regardless of the party that they are when they're in office.
I think it did lasting damage to the institution, Jenna. And
absolutely,
there are going to be other presidents involved in other brouhahas, and they're going to first talk is impeachment. And it's hard to believe that almost 225 plus Democrats voted for that. The evidence wasn't there. And this is coming from a former prosecutor and defense attorney that follows evidence. And a Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to sink them. Both of you are involved in. Joe, if you don't know this, Jenna Ellis is Trump Pence 2020 chief counsel, and the Trump campaign has sued media outlets for publishing things as fact, which were not true, and so they've filed libel suits against them. Joe Morrissey, because he's not part of the Virginia, Richmond, big money, big business establishment, has been targeted by the local media here for forever, trying to get him out of politics because they can't tell him what to do because he does whatever he thinks is best for his constituents. And Joe has been targeted by media hits, and he is sued for libel. Jenna, I want you to start and then go to Joe, because I think you both are onto something here.
Yeah, well, you know, the fake news media, of course, is they use their power of the pen to politically target whomever they hate. And, you know, certainly the First Amendment gives journalists and, you know, all of us the freedom of speech, and also journalists, of course, the freedom of the press. But that has been so manipulated and so exaggerated to actually go into areas that are not protected by law. And that means that, you know, you and I can have opinions, of course, on anything. We can disagree with policy, But we aren't entitled to our own facts. We're not allowed to say something in the context of an opinion piece that is a provably false fact and then go on and have an opinion about that provably false fact. And that's exactly what CNN, The Washington Post, and The New York Times, which are the three entities that the Trump campaign is suing for defamation, that's exactly what they did. And they tried to couch it in the context of an opinion piece, when really their underlying statements were statements of fact that are false. And the statements in question, of course, you know, differed a little case by case, but essentially we're saying that the Trump campaign was had this overarching deal with Russia to influence the election, which is provably false, and they had absolutely no evidence for that in their statements. But what they're trying to do through the power of the pen is to appear to the public that those facts are true, and to deceive and mislead their readers, and of course irreparably harm the Trump campaign and others that they have, you know, of course, others that aren't party to our suits. But that's been the overarching problem with the media, is that they try to use the First Amendment as a shield for intentionally writing things that are knowingly and provably false. And this country, again, if our laws and our rule of law worked the way that it was designed, then we would have freedom of speech and would all have opinions. We can agree and disagree and have, you know, a free marketplace of ideas, but we would all be held to the same standard that you can't say things that are fundamentally defamatory and not true.
The free marketplace of ideas, a wonderful quote from an early Supreme Court juror that I love. I couldn't agree with Jenna more, John. I filed three defamation cases. And do you know how hard it is a public official to win those? It's okay if you're a public official to say something false about somebody. But if you say it's something that's false and it's also done maliciously or with malice, then that gets them, that gets you your judgment. It's almost impossible to win. Journalists can be lazy. They have the right to publish a false fact against a public official, but if they do it knowing that it's false, then it rises to libel. And I've won two, a $575,000 judgment, which I collected on a local market, and second one, and now I have a third one going right now.
Against the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Yeah, all right.
And you're going to win that one.
Well, I'm going to fight it, John, because that's what I said earlier. Somebody said, Joe, What does it cost you? I don't care what it cost. If I don't do it, it will be done against somebody else. And I led the mayoral race for 10 months, wire to wire, until they were determined that they weren't, that Joe Morrissey was not going to be mayor, and they published false facts that they knew were false, demonstrably knew that was false. And you know what? A jury's going to decide it. So let's just be clear. I believe in the power of free speech and the press, and I understand it should be a big hurdle, New York Times versus Sullivan, to overcome that. But you cannot say something that is false against a public official knowing that it's false and do it with malice. There's got to be accountability.
Cats and dogs.
Absolutely.
Living together. Joe Morrissey, state senator, lawyer, prosecutor, Democrat, Jenna Ellis, Republican, Trump supporter, the chief legal counsel for Trump Pence 2020. Great discussion, two of my favorite people.
I want you to breathe me. Let me be your. No fear.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBO.
With SRN News, I'm Greg Clugston in Washington. A Canadian acrobatic jet crashed into a British Columbian neighborhood during a flyover intended to boost morale during the pandemic. The Royal Canadian Air Force announced that a crew member was killed and another sustained serious injuries. The Snowbirds are Canada's equivalent of the U.S. Navy's Blue Angels. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell told CBS's 60 Minutes that once the coronavirus outbreak has been contained, the economy should be able to rebound substantially. However, he suggested that a full recovery won't likely be possible before the arrival of a vaccine. The grandstands were empty, but the cars were finally back on the track at Darlington Raceway in South Carolina today for the first live NASCAR event in 10 weeks. Kevin Harvick took the checkered flag, winning the Real Heroes 400. This is SRN News.
Let's welcome Jeremy Camp.
Hope comes home with I Still Believe. You can download it now at WatchSalemMedia.com. From the creators of I Can Only Imagine comes the uplifting true life story of Christian music megastar Jeremy Camp.
I'm supposed to be with her. I can't explain it. I just know that.
Jeremy's hope and faith are put to the test when tragedy strikes.
You're going to be healed.
What if I'm not supposed to be healed?
Don't say that.
I Still Believe is an incredible story of musical stardom, the heights of love, the depths of loss, and the healing power of the human spirit. One love can change your life.
You chose willingly to walk into the fire with her. That's what love is.
Witness the true story of Christian music star Jeremy Camp and his journey of love and loss that looks to prove there is always hope. Starring KJ Apa, Britt Robertson, Gary Sinise, and Shania Twain. Own I Still Believe on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital now from Lionsgate at WatchSalemMedia.com. That's what.
How will the weather affect you? WBOB weather.
Mostly sunny today, looking for a high of 86, partly cloudy tonight, down to 68, and then a 60% chance of rain for Monday, mostly sunny, highs of 88. 40% chance of rain Monday night through about the rest of the week, with mostly sunny days, highs into the upper 80s, partly cloudy at night, low near 70.
Most of us have been spending a lot more time at home recently. Now is the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on Giza Elegance MyPillows, roll and go anywhere pillows, duvet covers, Giza pillowcases, bolster pillows, and neck pillows. Just go to the Radio Listener Specials page at MyPillow.com. Use promo code WBOB. Or call 1-800-950-9024. If you order Mike's book, your entire MyPillow order will ship for free. Plus, he'll give you a $25 gift card for your next purchase. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to buy one, get one free on pillows, duvets, and more from MyPillow. Call 1-800-950-9024 or go to the Radio Listener Special page at MyPillow.com. Promo code WBOB.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Have you heard? The Ted and Sandy Gospel Program can be heard every Sunday from 7 to 8 a.m. on WBOB. Ted and Sandy guarantee to play you some of the best in Southern Gospel, Bluegrass Gospel, and Country Gospel available. They'll give you words of encouragement in your daily life, announce gospel sings, and church events in our area, and much more. Tune in every Sunday morning at 7, right here on WBOB.
I told you never to interrupt me while I'm working.
Join the live Twitter discussion.
I'm Twittering. Did you get my tweets? I just twoted all over the place.
Follow John Fredericks at JF Radio Show.
Let's get to Jen from Canada is on the line. Great to have you, Jen.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Fredericks. I'm calling because I'm very frustrated here in Canada with our Liberal government.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday morning, I opened the paper, and it says, our country's National Research Council has struck a deal with China to make a vaccine and to test their vaccine. And there's nothing, I called around yesterday, but no one wants to listen. They think China's great here. So can you tell Mr. Bannon to investigate this?
So let me ask you something, Jen. You're calling from Canada. Where in Canada, Jen, are you calling from? What city?
Winnipeg in Manitoba.
All right, so you're Winnipeg. I remember the old hockey team, the Winnipeg Jets.
Right.
Yes, back in the day. Now, so you're in Winnipeg, and your government is trying to strike a deal with the Chinese to come up with a vaccine for COVID-19.
It's already struck. The deal is struck already.
So they have a deal with the Chinese. Does any of your elected officials in Canada hold the Chinese accountable for the havoc they've and death and destruction they've wrought on the world by releasing this virus?
Well, in the opposition party, they've spoken up, but the party that's in power now, the Liberals, I'm sure you know Justin Trudeau, he loves everybody.
The man-child.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And our Minister of Health was so mad when Trump was angry with the World Health Organization. She said, we need international cooperation. Like, we live with a bunch of naive babies here. They're crazy here. Like, it's terrible, and there's nothing. Like, I called all the ministers, you know, in the government, and, you know, they say this is a done deal. And I just wish that Mr. Bannon could expose this. If you look at the Toronto Globe and Mail, if you want to Google it, you can see National Research Council strikes deal with China to develop vaccine. That's the headline. And it's by a reporter called Nathan Vanderclip.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see him speak, and he said there isn't a company in China that isn't run by the Chinese, Communist Party. Every company reports to them. They have
in Canada.
You know, so, yeah. No. In China.
Well, yeah. Obviously, right.
The reporter is stationed in China. And he found out about this deal. He was reporting about this deal. It wasn't in the mainstream media here.
So let me ask you this. So within the Liberal Party governing structure, right, the man-child, Pierre Trudeau, his son, down. So there's no accountability they're given to the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government for their role in releasing this virus, they knew it was human-to-human contact spread as early as November, December. They let people travel to Canada, U.S., West, Italy, Europe, but wouldn't let them travel to Beijing. And there's no accountability at all for that.
There's nothing. As a matter of fact, when Trump put the travel ban against China, about January 31st, I was calling to our, equivalent immigration, et cetera, to do the same. And they said they called me xenophobic too. So it took them a long time. No, there's no accountability. But to be fair, I just have to say one thing. There's two Canadians being held now by China. And so everything we do to China, I guess, has to be tempered by the fact that we're trying to get those two Canadians back.
Why are they being held, Jen?
They're being held because the Americans were charging criminal charges against a Huawei executive's daughter because I'm not sure. It was Huawei, and because the company was doing trade with Iran against one of your laws, so the Americans asked the Canadians to arrest her, which they did in Vancouver, and then because you have a treaty, you know, we have an extradition treaty, so she's being held, and so in retaliation, the Chinese took two Canadians, innocent Canadians, who were in China, and they're still holding them. So we're trying to get them back. So everything we do and say, we have to keep that in mind, too. But nevertheless, we didn't have to sign this deal with it's called the company, the Chinese companies CanSino. It's called CanSino, which is like, you know, the two countries, you know, working together. And it's our National Research Council has given like millions and millions of dollars.
I mean, it's just amazing to me, Jen, that your country and the liberal Trudeau regime there, the government there, is not only are they holding they're not holding the Chinese Communist Party accountable for anything that's gone on with this virus, but now they're making a deal with them to help get a vaccine, even though they willingly. I mean, the evidence now is mounting on an hourly basis that the CCP was fully aware of this virus all the way back in November. They knew that it was transmitted human to human. That's why they limited travel out of Wuhan to other parts of China, especially Beijing. You couldn't go there. They locked it down, but they continued to allow Wuhan residents who they suspected were infected to go travel the world and to the U.S., the West, exactly, and Canada.
I'd like to say one thing about that, and that is that for years we've been hearing how the Chinese are so ruthless against their own people. We would hear stories that, you know, storming if you had too many kids, or they'd, you know, do all kinds of things to people in the provinces. If you spoke out, you got killed. We heard all these stories, right? That's really a human rights abuses.
Right.
But now, when they made the decision, this is what I say, when they made the decision that you just spoke of, to tell everyone, okay, it's Chinese New Year, go out and celebrate all over the world except in China, right? 5 million of them left China, and they went, Navarro says, they seeded this disease all over the world, right? That decision, to me, was the same equivalent to what they do to their own people.
Mm-hmm.
They knew people were going to die, and how many have, you know, thousands and tens of thousands have died, hundreds of thousands, you know. So I think that's the equivalent. To me, it should be deemed like an act of war. It should be, you know, some horrendous. They should be accountable. Just like Nuremberg, we held the Germans accountable. Nazis, rather, I think that something should be done eventually, and you know, we should just be cutting them off. The other point that I want to make, and I really do hope that you'll bring this up to Mr. Bannon,
because
there's no equivalent here. The Globe and Mail headline, if you Google, is National Research Council strikes deal with China to develop vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable, Jen. One more question I got to take off. In the middle of this, man-child Trudeau did a gun grab, right? And he banned assault, certain assault weapons all through Canada, all regions of the country. I think he gave a 2-year time frame to hand in your guns. The government will buy them back, or they're going to confiscate them. Why did that go? Why wasn't there outrage over that? Why wasn't there protest? Why did Canadians just say, Oh, okay, man, child, fine.
You know, I have to tell you that I've been noticing this all my life. There's such a big difference between Canadians and Americans in that way. Canadians, we just accept whatever the government. We're very polite and we're very subservient, and we just say okay. And like, there's just no speaking out. The people just here don't speak out. That's all I can tell you. We just don't. And I don't know if our gun, we don't have like a so-called organized gun lobby like you guys do. So there's a big difference.
So he just did a gun grab and figured right in the middle of the pandemic, not a better time but to take advantage of the death and destruction going on into the economy. Well, thank you, Jen.
Exactly.
I tell you what, Kira's going to get this call. We're going to send it over to Bannon a little bit later on today.
He may want to interview the reporter, too, Vanderclip, because he's really good.
Back by popular demand, my good friend, the founder of Liberty Health Share, we got him out of retirement just for my show, Dale Bellis. Dale? You're too young to retire. I told you that.
To be with you, John.
You don't be retiring, man. You're the guy. You're the founder. You can't be retired. Hey, if I'm not retired, you're not retired, Dale.
Well, fair enough, and I'm glad to be with you, John. Thank you so much.
So, listen, I was checking. I've been with Liberty HealthShare, my family and I, for 10 years. It's a long time.
Bless you. Yeah.
I know.
And it's an example of how Americans come together whenever there's an opportunity to assist each other. It's kind of in our DNA, John. It's a part of our national experience. When someone has a need, a child is in the well, minors are trapped in the mine. You know, whatever the crisis or need is, Americans rise up, assist each other. The COVID-19 experience bears that out as well. And we're just simply an organized methodology for people to put that practice into motion every day.
So during this COVID-19, tell us what's happening with Liberty HealthShare. What are some of your members saying? I've been very happy with it for 10 years, and I know that all the people that I've recommended to it in my listening area, nobody has ever complained about it. Everybody's told me they're happy with it, and including my older son, 30. He's now a teacher, high school teacher in Mississippi, but when he was in between jobs, he took it for 12 months when he was in between coverage and said it was fabulous.
Well, we have obviously want our members to be healthy and well, to be protected. We've encouraged them to follow the guidelines in terms of maintaining health and wellness. And yet at the same time, exercise our individual freedoms to live our lives. And while the threat of COVID-19 exists, it's a real virus out there. That doesn't mean that we lose our freedoms and choices as individuals regarding the care of our health. And so our membership continues to grow and increase as a community, and our members continue to thrive.
Nothing really changes, right, with Liberty HealthShare, because like
nothing really changes. A COVID-19 treatment, if it occurs, is an eligible expense. We share those costs. But we've just not seen a massive amount of members affected by the COVID-19, and for that we're grateful.
You've not really seen that many COVID-19s, but you guys covered. If I get the virus and I have to be hospitalized, have to go, God forbid, on a ventilator, but just, you know, need the hospital care, I'm in a unit, I mean, that is covered. I've got Liberty Health Share as far as my share provider, and that would be other people would be providing. I mean, that's part of your plan, right?
We've reassured our members that that's an eligible expense if they incur medical costs because of a COVID-19 infection. We're there for them and we'll assist them and stand by them the entire time.
So a lot of people, again, the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and others, you know, saying, hey, this because of COVID-19, you know, this is the time where everybody needs, you know, Medicare for all, universal health insurance. And, of course, that's not free. That'll cause, you know, rationing, waiting lines. And, you know, the government will be telling you what you could do and can't do. But Liberty HealthShare really has solved that as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we've really been founded on the principle that you and I and every other American have the God-given right to manage and direct and control the care of our own health. And so we live out that freedom every day by, you know, connecting with a healthcare provider of our choice, going to the doctor when we need to. If we need a hospitalization, we do so. We don't have a network to fumble through. We choose our own doctors, our own hospitals, and are in charge of the care of our health. And that's the fundamental freedom that we exercise, and it's the privilege that we live out every day, that we have the responsibility and the right to care for our health.
Do you think that some people are using the pandemic to scare people into universal coverage against their will, where you really have no choice over your doctor, your surgery, your medical needs? I mean, it's all dictated by the government.
There does seem to be that attempt to utilize a public health crisis like the coronavirus to offer a solution of government control. And we look at that and just essentially say the core issue regarding the care of our health is our individual freedom. And there's nothing that works against that more than the government intruding and making those decisions and imposing choices on us apart from our own individual freedom. And so as a group, we just simply stand against this momentum towards socialized medicine.
Well, that's really what it is. It's socialized medicine. We're with Dale Bellis. Dale is the founder of Liberty HealthShare. Myself and my family have been with Liberty for 10 years. I mean, I just have to say this. I don't know when the last time I thought about my health care plan. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, all the good things are there, but a lot of people fret about their health care plan, how they're paying for it, where is it, you know, what's covered, what doctor, get out the chart, you know, did I get overbilled? I never think about it. I mean, I've been on this 10 years, and I never think about it because it works. When something's working, it's kind of like my Dominion energy bill, right? The only time I think about Dominion is when I live in Virginia, is when I get the bill and it's higher than it normally is, which is not often, or when the power's out. Other than that, like, I just don't worry about getting my power. It's kind of been the same thing with Liberty HealthShare. I was thinking about, you know, what can I say to Dale? I've been on a 10-year anniversary. What can I say? And I could say, I'm happy. I've had no problems. And I don't think about it. I mean, what else is there?
Similarly, we have 250,000 individuals as members across America who exercise that same sense of confidence and reassurance about their lives, knowing they're in charge of the care of their health. And if there's an expense, the group is there to help resolve and take care of that cost. And we're doing so every month, John, at the tune of $30 million every month. We're paying each other's medical bills, and that's the experience across America.
Dale Bellis, my good friend Dale, we got him out of retirement. We had to rustle him up, and because he got good things happening, you know. And he's the founder of Liberty HealthShare. Save my family. We've been on a 10-year. I can't believe it. We've been on a 10 years. Great company. I love the system. Everybody should check this out. I'm telling you, if you don't have health insurance, or you're not happy with your carrier, you got to wait between those. Whatever those sign-up periods are, I don't even know what they are. Whatever it is you have to do, forget it. Just go to Liberty HealthShare. I've never had a problem, and my family and I are very happy with it. Ann's on it. I'm on it. My son, who just turned 16, is on it. He got out when he was 6. You know, we all get checkups, go to the doctor, all that good stuff. In fact, I got to go tomorrow for my – not tomorrow. It's, I think, Friday, because they open up the state. I can finally get to see my doctor. Normally, I have to do the teledoctor thing. But I actually get to see him on Friday, get my normal checkup, if the governor doesn't put off opening up the state again or whatever he's doing. Who knows? But Dale Bellis, founder of Liberty HealthShare, let me ask you. I've been with you 10 years. What's your vision? Where's the organization going?
Well, we really do believe, even though successfully we've got 250,000 members, really we need to expand across America in a broader swath of participation, and really give people an opportunity to drop out of the third-party payment system and instead experience the freedom that you and I and 250,000 other members experience regarding health care. And so our goal is to expand. Now, there's two ways that we're approaching that, and both of them, frankly, have to do with some regulatory mazes that we have to work our way through. One is, all of us know that a health savings account is one of the most effective ways for you and I as a consumer to use our money wisely for healthcare costs. And yet healthcare sharing ministry members are not permitted to have a health savings account. We want to change that and give that additional tool to health sharing members. And so we're working with some legislators in D.C. to help alter and change that access to a health savings account. That will go a long way toward encouraging participation. The second is, at present, a health sharing ministry member
or cannot receive money from his employer to pay for his health care amount. And we think that's a flaw. And so we're working to address that particular issue in both with the administration and legislatively to give that opportunity for an individual employee to exercise their own choice and freedom, participate with health care sharing, even as an employee of an employer's group.
So wait a minute. I thought an employer was able to have their employees on Liberty Health Share and either pay for some of that or pay for all of that, Dale.
They certainly can do that, but it's not on the same basis as any other health care arrangement. Ordinarily, an employee would participate on a pre-tax basis with an employer's provision of health care benefits. Mm-hmm. But in health sharing, they have to pass it on. It's a part of taxable income. They just simply have to raise their
That's right. It's taxable income. It's taxable income. Yeah. So when we... Yeah. When we bring an employee on and we say you can have, we provide Liberty Health Share, we include it in their check, but they're taxed on that. That's taxable income.
Yeah, and we think that's unfair.
I get it now. I get it. So that's taxable.
Why? That's the case.
It's totally unfair.
We're faith based, and we do that on the basis of our belief that we're motivated to assist other people because of our shared value and belief.
Right. Right.
We believe it's fundamentally unfair to exclude an employee from what is otherwise available to every other person in America.
No, you're right. That's not fair at all. If the money that a company pays into somebody is not tax deductible for commercial insurance, it shouldn't be tax deductible for ministry sharing because it's the same thing, basically. So that's just not fair at all. And as far as the other thing you mentioned, health savings accounts, I mean, if I have a health savings account, why can't it go towards my share amount?
Either both that as well as to be used for health care expenses and costs that I pay for out of my pocket as a sharing member and do so on a tax advantage basis like the rest of the universe. So let's extend that to health sharing members as well.
All right, Dale, you're absolutely spot on. Go to libertyhealthshare.org, libertyhealthshare.org. Dale, great to have you back. Great to catch up with
you. What a
you,
pleasure, John.
As Thank always.
John Frederick.
Last night I went to dinner. This is how stupid this is. Why is the state of Tennessee open and four cities run by liberal Democratic mayors closed? You go over the line, everything is open. Step into the city limits, everything is closed. So everybody leaves the city and goes 1 mile away. It is the most insane thing I've ever seen.
While we're updating the app, listen online at WJFNradio.com. The link's at the top of the page.
And the only difference is Republicans control the state, Democrats control the city.
Listening to the John Frederick Show, common sense for the commonwealth, on great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.